had quite a great atmosphere at CHI on Saturday. I like to think the Johnsonville andouille sausages that I grilled at the tailgate were the main culprit. Probably had a little more to do with Beer Fest, though.
Well, that and the Rebels put a good product on the field. But I want to say the drumming was a bit intense because, you know, we were where we were sitting in the supporters section, the drums were right behind us. And my son had had games all day, so I told him he had to sit down. Like, he couldn't be standing the whole time. He had to rest. And I basically said, once we reach the point that you're ready to go home, just tell me, we'll go, right? And I never leave a game early, right? So, like, I'm trying to help him out because he had games on Sunday. And he looks up at me, and he's like, Dad, my nose is bleeding. I'm like, what? And sure enough, he's like gushing blood. And so we go and we get it all cleaned up, get it stopped. We go back to our seats. And like within like 5 minutes, it's bleeding again because the drums were so intense that the vibrations from the drums were making his nose bleed. And I think that's credit to, you know, that group of guys and girls. And by girls, I mean like little girls, because I think one of the drummers was like five. It was a Brendan Oglesby child. And
Oglesby!
It was some good stuff. But yeah, so maybe a little tip if you're coming to the supporters section for the highly likely playoff game, whether it's in the first or second round, maybe don't sit right under the drums.
Soccer chat with two T's, because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga. So it's like a play on words. And, you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
Woke up on Sunday morning with a little bit of a headache that I am going to now say was entirely because of the drums and had nothing to do with the Woodford Reserve Double Oak that was at the tailgate. That is my story, and I'm sticking to it.
You keep telling yourself that, because when I had it poured for me, I, like, looked at the cup and was like, did you pour it like it was a beer? Like, holy crap. How many fingers of liquor are you giving me when I've already had a couple tall boys? Like, I was definitely glad I had 2 hours before I chose to drive home. Let's put it that way. Tailgate was great. Anyone who listens, if we do end up with a home playoff game, please come out to the tailgate beforehand. It's a good group of people. It's a good time. Obviously you're looking October 22nd or October 29th, depending on how we finish. And we'll get a little bit more into that later, but tailgate was a lot of fun. And we ended up, going to the tailgate. Jeff was there. You were there. A lot of the usual suspects had a good time, and then headed into the game where we continued to have a good time. And Jeff has just joined us live from East Ridge. Jeff, I'm going to start with you. What'd you think of the atmosphere?
It's certainly one of the best I think I've experienced at CHI Memorial, maybe the best. We were rocking. I think it was a mixture of maybe that pent-up frustration that we could do better, but yet there was – I just got the sense that the supporters were going to will it into existence, and they knew that the team – has gone through a lot on and off the pitch, you know, on the field, and just things that have nothing to do with them, but it drops on them. So I think that there was an extra sense of really showing support for this side who's given so much, and it really paid off. It was amazing being there. And it's like, you don't want to get up because you don't want to leave. So that was fantastic. And for a guy that has to pee a lot, I didn't have to do that because I didn't want to.
If you had been sitting near the drums, the vibrations would have probably not been good for your sensitive bladder.
Yes, that's the reasons why this old man is in section 116. Woo!
So to me, a lot of it comes down to the performance that was made on the field. You came into the game and you could see the team was locked in. They were ready to come out and play hard. We had Mo putting in a fantastic goal. Jeff, what did you dub that?
Molazo. Is that how you pronounce
right.
that?
The Molazo. Instead of a Golazo, it's a Molazo. That's right.
And fourth goal of the week for him.
Yeah, you know.
So they put in that goal, and for quite a while, the pressure was on. You know, the Charlotte was just kind of flailing to kick balls away. They couldn't get them away. We had them pinned in our own end. Players were getting on it. All sorts of buildup. Like, I have said all the time, people talk about how, oh, we need the fans and we need to create this great atmosphere. You do that by picking a winning team, a team that plays exciting soccer that's trying to score goals. And that's exactly how they played this game. And it kept the fans' attention. It held us there. It kept us, you know, anticipation of there's going to be another goal that's going to come. All of those sorts of things. And that's what feeds that atmosphere. It's not just, oh, do you have cool beers? And do you have trendy uniforms? And do you get social media love from the right people? Do you put a product on the field that is exciting and fun to watch and successful? And that's going to lead to this. So there's, you know, there's a ton of people who came because Beer Fest was there, and the fact that they got to see such an awesome, complete performance from that team. Their friends, my wife went to high school with, who've never been to a soccer game. They didn't even go watch her play high school soccer. You know, they came and they said, this is one of the best times I've ever had. And that's what gets them to come back. People who are not huge soccer fans, not soccer snobs, that are like, oh, wow, this is really fun. These guys are really good. And they come back, and that atmosphere builds itself and feeds itself.
Well, that comes from long-term relationship with the players and the fans. And even if you've never met one of the players face to face, if you support them after a while, you feel connected. And our team does try to reach out. They respond to us, but there's that goodwill equity, at least among the players on the pitch, I think is starting to pay out. And you can see more and more where you're seeing a lot of kids that's their heroes. And you've always had that to a level, but I don't think we've had it quite to the level we have it now. And well, the kids can't wait to see them.
And you talk about the connection with the fans. Something that, you know, somewhat gets lost on probably the three of us to a point is we have a lot of Hispanic fans that are at those games that get a chance to talk with these players who, you know, Spanish or Portuguese is their first language. And they interact frequently with those fan bases on the sidelines. Like, they really do. Like, they go over, you can see them talking to them as they're warming up on the sideline if they're a sub. You can see them turning around and, you know, waving for them to get excited. And they really have a connection. And part of that connection is you're right there on the field, right? It's an experience like you really don't even get anywhere else. I mean, I'm including anywhere else in USL League One. That includes the new Tormento Stadium, which is still basically far away. Like, it's still lifted up like a football stands. It's not right there like we are. And it does create a different atmosphere. But going back to what Alex has said, I think as much as you can do all those things and connecting with fans and do those things, if you create an atmosphere and an experience that's just a blast, they'll come back, whether they have that real connection with the fans or not. Because if your goal is to have connection with players, you're on the wrong level league, right? Like, Wally being here for 4 years is the outlier, not the norm, right? You're talking 1, maybe 2 years with most of these players before they move on, hopefully for their sake, up to championship and then down the road, maybe even onto MLS. Like, we're, as fans, you're wanting them to leave you, especially the younger guys. You're wanting Mo Espinoza to get that opportunity if he's not back next year that could be because he's playing in championship, right? You want these guys who came to open tryouts and earned a spot and then worked their way up. You want them to leave you.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, in the amount of games that we have in League One, you're talking 28 games over the course of a year, you do feel connected to them, especially the way they engage with fans. Like, you see our captain engaging with Wolfman Jeff on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
He's responding to him and saying, thanks for being there. It means a lot. Like, that's the captain of our team that's just reaching out to someone that's a fan, right? And so you're right. There is a difference between this and you know, I'm a fan of a lot of sports, right? You know, I'm sitting here wearing my Arsenal shirt. I don't expect an Arsenal player to reach out to me and say, thanks for being a fan, right? Like, that's not what you expect for that level. But at this level, they're doing it. They're doing that. The players are doing it. I think the argument could be made that the team doesn't do a great job of engaging their fans, other than like one or two fans. But the team, the players themselves do. The players themselves respond. They, you know, I've gotten friend requests from players and who have reached out and said, thanks for being out there, right? Like on Twitter or whatever. Like that doesn't happen in other areas. And I genuinely want people to realize these players care about winning these games, not just for themselves, but because of the support that they receive at that stadium. And it has grown. The 3,000 fans is not, I don't think it's a false number. Like
no.
During the second half, we went to the other side so we could mess with their goalkeeper. And I have never seen that many adults on the hill, because they sold overflow tickets for the hill and they legitimately had to sit on the hill. The only other place they had was to sit in the supporters section under the drums behind the netting. And let's just be honest, it costs more for that ticket and it's got a freaking net in your way. Not going to sell a ton of those seats. You're just not. And if you do sell them,
and it was pretty full. If you're looking around at that game, it was pretty full for this game.
But even then, like if I'm a fan that's bought those tickets because that was all that was available, and I can see that I can go stand behind the stands and not have a net in front of me, I might be doing that, right? This is what I'm saying. Like to get that actually full is unlikely until you've built a true supporters culture, which isn't going to be here right now. But that gives bad optics to a point. Like the two areas that have like really bright red seats are the areas for like the super expensive seats where all those people can go inside to get free food and drink and have a beautiful view of the entire stadium from up there. So
that
a lot of those
executive club is something else.
Yeah. So a lot of those people are up in there, right? So that's your middle of your stadium, not the best optics. And then right behind one of your goals, not the best optics. So when you hear 3,000 fans, if you're not there, you probably don't realize, yeah, it really was that many people there. And there was a difference in the loudness of the whole thing. Like even when we went to the other side away from the drums, it was super loud in that stadium. Yeah. All right. So I think we've talked enough about that. Let's go back and talk about something that I thought was hilarious. They got their goal to tie us up. It was the Red Wolves Invitational this weekend, and there was a bunch of kids behind the goal that weren't Red Wolves fans. Like they were kids from a different team that had walked out on the field. So they had those like walkout kid shirts, but they were wearing like a non-Red Wolves Academy shirt underneath, because they had another academy walk out, right?
Yeah.
So these are not even like traditional Red Bulls kids that are giving the keeper a hard time, but they had given him a hard time. And this giant of a man turns around to these 12-year-olds and is like doing this whole like clappy thing in front of them. And so it brought so much more joy when the second half got around. So let's talk about that, Alex. What did you think of the second goal by the Red Bulls?
It was an excellent effort by Timmy Mell, and it looked like Carrera Garcia from that corner had hit something that was laser guided, because it went right to, and we were standing by the post where it went in, so it went right to Timmy Mell's forehead. He got it at just the right angle to knot it in and put it in that corner in the near post, and that keeper had no chance. It was like off his head and in the back of the goal before he could get his hands up for a reaction. He heard about it.
Yeah, he definitely heard about it. All three goals, by the way, by the Red Wolves were high.
Yeah.
All three of them were high, which was shocking, because I remember telling Alex beforehand, there's no way this guy's going to be able to stop anything low. He's 6'5". Like, and didn't look like a guy who could easily get down. And so I was confident if we were going to score, it was going to be low, and all three goals were high. And yeah, Alex was very, how should I say this? Aggressively vocal to the keeper, to the point where the security guard.
PG. We were PG. Thank you.
Yeah, but it was vocal.
It was vocal, yes.
The security guard could not stop laughing. Like this is a security guard that basically told Alex and I, you can't stand right behind the goal, which, can I just say this in case anyone from the Red Bulls or USL is listening to this? Being behind the net seems a little safer than just to the right of the net. I'm just a thought. Like having a net protecting you in the goal, seems a little safer than being right next to it. And there was a point where a ball 100% went right to where, if there wasn't a fence there, I would have been speaking in an octave a couple levels higher. Just saying. All right, so Jeff, third goal. From where you were, what did it look like to you?
Well, at first, I wanted to make sure it went in because we were at a vantage point. It was really kind of hard to see that it did go in. And we think it went in, so he had that bit of hesitation. And then when we saw that it did go in.
I can confirm it did go in.
Right, I know. But in the moment, where we were at that side, because you've seen so many that look like they go in, and then Clayton, you know, lets the smoke go off.
Wow.
Premature smoke elation.
Yeah. He's just, Clayton's just kind of, you know, he's young enough. He's got extra cans. And,
totally not cutting that part. Nope. Not cutting it.
He's playing all this out. But no, at first it was like, wait, it did go in. You're thinking it went in, and it did go in. So it was like, but at first you couldn't really see who it was. And I was kind of surprised because usually Timmy's not the one, you know, getting those headers in unless, you know, but, you know, if he's in the right place in the set piece, he's really good. He uses his height to a great advantage. But even though he's a defender, he's an aggressive defender. And he's going to, you know, if he's got a shot, he's definitely taking it. He took it with a lot of confidence. But I do want to say, it was set up for him just beautifully.
Well, so that's the second goal that he made. But he also was integral in the third goal. And both of those are right in front of Alex and I because we were standing right next to the goal. His pass across, back across. So the ball comes to him. And instead of just trying to tap it in, which you see so often from a bad angle, he heads it back across perfectly and just no chance once again for the keeper. He's having to then complete, he's expecting the shot. He leans this way, goes back this way, and then comes back across him. No shot. Beautiful goal. 3-1. And then at that point, my son looked at me and said, I need to go back home, Dad. I have a game at 8 in the morning. And so I left after we were up 3-1. So you guys are going to have to tell me, what did it feel like going into that PK? My son had to be back at the field at 7:15, which meant leaving my house at 6:45. So, yeah.
It's so funny that he tells you that. That's, like, more responsible than me.
It's more responsible than me, too.
So, yeah, great work by Juan Galindrez on that corner when he scored the goal, by the way. He started to run out like he was going for a short corner. And once the ball came back in the box, I think everyone pretty much lost track of him. Timmy heads it across, and there he is to get on the end and finish that ball in. So great work by El Tonque on that one, leading the team in goals. Still, you know, I don't know that he's going to catch anyone for the Golden Boot. I mean, he could go off and get a hat trick in one of these last few games and maybe catch someone. But he's had a great, great year. Yeah. I think it's a good call on the penalty. Timmy Mel left that trail leg sticking out and managed to trip the guy. He gave his little protest, but I think it was a good call.
I've gone back and rewatched. I'd agree.
And I don't want to take away from Carlos, but it was not a well struck penalty. He did not get it close to this post. He didn't hit it with much power. It was not low, and so Carlos did an excellent job, kind of leaving that left hand tucked in so that he could reach up and parry that ball away when it didn't really get all the way where he would have to stretch for it.
Well, I think at that point we had such confidence building up to the Tanki goal and then stopping the penalty. We were strutting like, you know, you just can't beat us. And that was felt by the fans, and I think it was felt by the team. They knew they were going to win. And I think that may be one of the things that made this night so special is we really haven't had that in a lot of our matches where we really just knew it was, you know, it's like in that Harry Potter film where he took that potion and everything's going his way. That's how we felt. We felt like everything, it was guaranteed. And it was great to be part of it. I think the setups were great, especially for that last goal. I think Jose Correa-Garcia is masterful at our general on the field, but they did a lot better this match of not just kicking the ball back and starting back up, but actually taking those opportunities. I was impressed with the penalty save. And yes, it's not the most difficult of it, but really any penalty save is tricky. And I think that, you know, I think that he kept his form very well. It was a really solid save, and I think he's come a long way as a keeper. And so I think that's going to continue to boost his confidence as we go in the last two games.
So I will say that had that penalty been converted, it would have really given me the rumblies in my tummy. The last 10 minutes, you know, I was about the 85th minute. The last 10 minutes of that game in a 3-2 with us having just given up that goal would have really made me nervous to see that game out. So Carlos coming up with that save energized them. In the last 10 minutes, like you said, they had the confidence of, we got this one in the bag.
Yeah.
And a good call out that it was not a, we're just going to keep clearing the ball and sit back and defend. But, hey, we're going to hold this. We're going to make some passes. We're going to go out to the corner and kill some time. We're going to let them overcommit themselves and run into space. They did a lot of that. It was a really good job of seeing out the game once they had the lead.
And the fans didn't mentally check out. At that point, even though we weren't scoring anymore.
You physically, mentally, you were still here, Adam.
Actually, I had the game playing on my phone with Jonah watching it and me listening to it in the car. So, yeah, I was just physically checked out.
We stayed engaged with it. We stayed loud. We put on the additional pressure that Charlotte did feel. And so we love a good game. We don't want anybody hurt, but we don't really want the other side to feel real comfortable at CHI Memorial. And we do our part to make it an uncomfortable experience for them.
All right. So before we get into the game that we've got coming up versus last place North Carolina, I want to talk a little bit about where we are in the standings. And I'm going to share where the standings currently are showing. I'm going to bring that up here in just a second onto our let me just zoom this sucker up a little bit. All right. So
Silicon Valley, they refer to it as a screen.
I'm going to present the screen. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. So I'm going to show you the screen here, and I want you guys to take a look at a couple things.
You kids so, technical.
So first and foremost, over here on the far right, this is on Google's League One standings. It shows you recent quality. Richmond's got three straight ties. Greenville's got three straight ties. Union has two ties and three losses. Not great at the top. So what does that mean for us? It means it's not unrealistic for us to think it's possible for us to get up to the second spot. We would need some help, obviously. But with the games that are continuing here, where you've got Richmond having two games left, those games being versus Ford Madison and Greenville, right? If that means that Greenville's got to play a tough game. And with Greenville having to play this tough game, say Richmond wins that game versus Greenville, we win both our games, we're ahead of them, right? So Union Omaha, who were their games versus? Tormenta and Central Valley. Tormenta wins that game. Once again, we win both our games. We end up ahead of them because they could only end up at 45 points. One of those games is versus Tormenta, who's above us, right? That means if we win both our games, we end up above them. So we're rooting for Richmond to do well because we can move all the way to second.
Yeah, because
so Greenville's other game is against Charlotte in sixth place. That's this weekend. Greenville's going to play Charlotte. So that is also a game where Charlotte's looking for a result. Greenville's not going to have an easy time.
Yeah. I mean, and basically, Tormenta, Union, Greenville, and Richmond have all clinched a playoff spot at this point, I believe. Maybe not. Just the top three have technically clinched. And they really haven't technically clinched, but Hailstorm can only get to 42 points. Their goal differential is 3. So maybe they could catch Union or Greenville, but it's, I'm sorry, it's not goal differential, it's wins, right?
Wins the so, first part, and then it goes to goal differential.
Yeah, so in theory, every team but Richmond could technically fall to seventh place, right? So this is what I'm trying to get at. Hailstorm can technically get up to 42 points and be ahead of Greenville and Union because of wins. For them to get to 42, they'd be tied on wins. They already have a 3-goal differential. For them not to stay at 42, their goal differential has to go down. So they could end up ahead of them, right? So there's still a lot of movement there. But the other side of it is Richmond Kickers haven't sewed up first or second. Think about that for a second. They lose both those games. And Greenville and Union, who do not play each other, so they can win both their games, can end up at 48 points but for both of them. And Richmond could end up at 47 and not getting a playoff bye. So every team this weekend that is still mathematically able to make the playoffs, which barely includes Central Valley, has something to play for. We're rooting for Richmond, though. Let's make that clear. Because we want Greenville and Union to be able to be passed by us. If Richmond wins both their games and Tormenta wins their only game that's not versus us, and we win both our games, we finish second.
All right, I don't like you telling me what to do, but I do think we're rooting for Charlotte this weekend.
Yeah, that's fine.
What I think when you're looking at the scenarios, the simplest thing to say, and it's crazy to think about, I mean, really what we're aiming for is second. We can't get up to Richmond and in first place. But like Greenville and Omaha don't even have to lose. If they take only 4 points in their remaining games and we win out, then we are tied with them on points at the end of the season and we go ahead of them on wins. We'll end up at 13. If they only have 4 points, you know, they'll only have one more win in their tallies. So we'll end up ahead of them with the wins tiebreaker in second place.
Good point.
And so, yeah, if Tormenta and Omaha play to a draw, that works out great for us. Then we go down to Tormenta. Now, all of this, of course, depends on us going on the road and taking care of business. And so that's really, yeah, I think you want Richmond. Rooting for Richmond this weekend, their game doesn't really matter. Greenville is going to be playing Charlotte. It'd be great for Charlotte to come away with a win, I think. Even if they come away with a draw, though, then Greenville has a lot of pressure in their final game against Richmond to try to make sure they're getting that playoff bye and things like that. So
basically, as I've said a million times, root for ties.
Right. Like, well, and Omaha's final game of the season is going to be against Central Valley. They're not playing this weekend, so that final game, Central Valley may have some outside shot of if we can knock off Omaha, we sneak into the playoffs and then can charge $25 for the Michelob Ultra because game.
And it's not that – they've got to feel like it's not that outside of a chance, right? Because both them and Hailstorm sitting – Hailstorm's last game is this weekend. And if Hailstorm ties or loses – And Charlotte ties or loses, Central Valley, which is just a win and they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so they're watching significantly this weekend. But yeah, I mean, they're not real. I mean, it's not that out of the realm to think that Charlotte will lose to Richmond, right? It's just not. And it's not that crazy to think who the Hailstorm, like Hailstorm can always lose, but who the Hailstorm play? They play Tucson, who's eliminated. So now it's a matter of does Tucson show up with pride in that game or not?
Well, it depends. Are they playing us?
Right. Oh, geez. 5 wins versus everybody else. 5. All right. So enough of that. Well, I wanted to kind of go over those various things, and let's actually talk about the game that we are going to be traveling to North Carolina. What is your expectation going in? This is a North Carolina team that hasn't really been that great, right? And yeah, they beat Central Valley Fuego on the 28th. They tied Union Omaha. But this is not a team that when you look at what they do and you look at their stats, you say to yourself, man, I'm worried about them, right? Like, I don't look at a team that's given up 47 goals, which is the most in the league and think I should be worried because we're a scoring team. What are you guys thinking?
Yeah, they've got some talent, but you know, I had expected them to make more improvements this year compared to last. Last year, they were certainly the bottom team, so I'd expected them to be more mid-table. But they went ahead and they made some changes, but they look better on the field, but they're not getting the results. I think they've improved their side, but they haven't gotten them in that attitude of that they're going to win. So that's why I think going into this, you know, there's some teams that if they're already out, they'll try to beat you out of spite. I don't see that with North Carolina. I don't see that fight in them. I'll see some individuals try to impress, but I don't see North Carolina really pulling together with for team pride.
They're a young team. They're speedy. Garrett McLaughlin is a player that scares me. Mm-hmm. Could easily find himself at the back post where someone should be marking him but hasn't been able to catch up, and he pokes something in on us. You're right. They're mathematically eliminated. This game is just kind of them playing out the string. As I've said before, there's no gimmies in League One. You can't count anyone out. Some of these guys are going to go out and they're going to want to, you know, try to impress Jimmy Weakley and Sean McDaniel so maybe they can have a chance to play for a contender next year. And if they come out on the field and are able to score early, it increases the tension for our players on the field because they know that they're looking for wins. They want to come away with a result in this game and lock down a playoff spot, first of all, and know that if they win, they've got themselves in a chance to get second place in the bye. So if we fall behind, things could be very nervy. If we're able, you know, if Carrera Garcia or Mo gets to hit a free kick from 25 yards out and put something in a top corner, and then all of a sudden Galindrez pops on a rebound and we're up 2-0 going in at halftime, that could be a very fun second half as kind of the wheels come off for North Carolina, you think, when they go down and say, well, we're behind. Oh, well, the season's pretty much done anyway. You know, you could kind of see something like that happening and things going our way. And us, like I said, having a lot of fun and increasing that goal differential that doesn't really count for anything.
Well, it could end up counting for something if we somehow ended up tied with Greenville, right? No, it can't. At this point,
I think eventually, yeah, if we ended up tied with Greenville, we'd have to have more wins to get there.
Yeah, you're right. It literally does not matter.
But it makes us feel better.
Yeah.
That we have the second highest goal differential. Thanks, Charlotte.
Well, right now, we had the same amount of wins with Greenville. So if we ended up tying with Greenville in points, that meant we would have gotten one more win.
Yeah. Yeah, we would have to. One other thing I did want to mention that I was looking at stats and such, and I wanted your guys' opinion on this. Is leading the league in saves an indictment on your defense? And to add to that, if you're leading the league in saves by 17 saves, just 18 saves, just to throw a number out there, and your team has given up only 34 goals, does that mean you're a good goalkeeper, or does that mean your defense is that crappy? Like, which one is it? Like, do you want to be leading the league in saves?
That depends. Are you talking about Rashid Nuhu or Carlos Avalos?
I am talking about Akira Fitzgerald. Good save Fitzy has 101 saves on the season.
Wow.
The next closest is Valdez in FC Tucson with 83. You don't get to Nuhu until you get to seventh place with 50 saves.
My point is, are you making the argument for your guy or are you making the argument against the other guy? Because that's pretty much where I'd come down on that. If he's my guy and he's got the most saves, then it's because he's an amazing goalkeeper.
Or is it because your defense is that terrible? Like, he's a great goalkeeper. I'll give you. I like Fitzy as a keeper. I think he positioned himself well. I think he's got a very good first reaction. He's a very good keeper.
Fitzy, give us a call.
But a lot of 101 saves in 28 games, and you've also given up 34 goals? Whew. That's a busy man, right? To give you a difference of check on that, you know, yeah, granted, you know, he, I think, has started every game for them in goal, but Alvarez or Carlos has 42.
like
Nuhu has 50. Like, and it's not like he's leading the league in clean sheets, Fitzgerald. He only has 5 clean sheets.
So I think you have a good point, and I think really probably what it comes down to, you know, I think back even to the game that we played in April with the whole good save Fitzy, when we beat them 1-0, should have been 2-0, but he came up with a really good save on Jimmy Villalobos. And we spent the rest of the game telling him that it was a good save. That's where all that comes from.
And he gave us a thumbs up smile afterwards.
So. Yes, he eventually was like, yeah, thanks. I get it. But they sat back. They sat back and defended. And that seems to maybe have been what they tried to do. We Red Wolves possessed the ball, try to get it into the attacking third. You know, we talked a little bit about how sometimes it felt like they took their feet off the gas too much in the middle of the season. But that, even that, it was us possessing the ball, passing it in our own half, not we're going to let the other team have the ball and we're going to defend. As a team that tries to positively possess the ball, Carlos isn't going to come up with as many saves. It seems as if, you know, Richmond is doing that negative kind of, we're just going to kind of absorb. They've got fast players and they like to hit you on the counter. That's what Greenville has done very successfully. And if it's what the Red Wolves were doing, I don't know how interested I'd be in the Red Wolves. I like that we have the positive, possess the ball, put the pressure on the other team, try to press in the midfield and win the ball back. That makes it more fun and exciting to me. Maybe to dry maybe a few more times, but.
Well, here's what's interesting about it is we only have, as a team, 333 shots. Richmond has 329. So I think that speaks a little bit to the fact that middle of the season, we were just kind of sitting in the middle of the field. Like, we weren't really pressing it forward, but we also weren't allowing them to get shots on us, which I think Richmond, and I think you can tell by the way, you know, the fact that who leads their team in goals is their whole play is defense, shoot it over the top and hope that Trezaghi can score.
Or fall over.
Right. Well, that's how he normally scores, is by falling over. And then getting a penalty kick. And you know what? I could be way off. I don't even know what the penalty kick numbers are. So,
My favorite was this most recent Richmond game where Timmy Mel was running up behind Terzaghi. He felt his footsteps coming and, you know, threw himself into the position and fell over. And Timmy Mel completely dodged him. And he fell just on his own, on his face, anticipating Timmy Mel was going to hit him in the back. And it was the perfect encapsulation of what I feel like Richmond soccer is. Hmm. And it's why I don't enjoy watching them. And I'm really happy when we can beat them or come from behind to tie them so that they can't clinch their playoff spot against us.
All that to say, get a good tie for us, guys. All right, so let's give our predictions for the game versus North Carolina. I'm going to start with you, Jeff. What do you got?
3-0. Or actually 0-3, since we'll be in North Carolina. I think our defense has improved. We're really solid with our starting, as long as we still keep Mel and Navarro healthy. I think Carlos is playing the best he's ever played. So I think I'm predicting a clean sheet. I think Mo, at this point, it's almost like it's in his contract that Mo has to score at least every game. And I think Tanky is really hungry to get more. I'm going to pick Villalobos for the third one.
All right. What do you got, Alex?
So after the match on Saturday, I asked Mo if he had any more room on his wall for the Goal of the Week awards that he's received. And Aaron Lombardi joked that he can't score simple ones. They have to be bangers.
Yeah.
So we are 6-0 lifetime against North Carolina. We've beat them every time we've played them there. We've beat them every time we've played them in Chattanooga. We've played them close. We've had games where we blew the doors off of them. And we've come from behind, as we did in April or March. I can't remember when exactly we played in North Carolina earlier this year. I see this going similarly. I think we get up early, and I think we romp in the second half. I think they score a cheapie. So I'm going to say 5-1.
Okay. I want to first, before I give a prediction, apologize to Tuzargi. He has 2 penalties on the year. I thought he'd have like 7. I'm going to say it's going to be a little bit closer than either of you. I think it's going to be a 2-1, but one of those 2-1s that's not really a nail-biter. We're up 2-0, and we give up a goal in like the 88th minute, and then we control it for the rest of the game. Like, I just feel like we're going to fall in the same habit. What I'm interested in is we got to see David Teixeira on the bench at home in this last game. He didn't make it into the game. Is there anyone that hasn't been playing of late that we've suddenly start seeing appear on the bench, seeing him more on social media? Do you think someone like David Teixeira might actually get into this game? Or do you think it was more of just where we have him on the bench because he's been trying hard to get back?
If things go well, I think there could be a chance where, you know, we're up 3-0, 4-0 in the 70th minute, and they let David come on for the last 15 or so, let Juan get a break, knowing that there's another big game the week after in Tormenta.
Yeah. Traditionally, we've favored having Juan come off the bench and finish it off. The way he's playing right now, I feel confident with him getting the start. And how do I word this? This is his second year with the Red Wolves. I'm anticipating we won't get a third, because again, it's very rare for us to have a player come back for a third year. So I think he's going to want to put it all out through there, because she's probably shopping himself to get up a little higher. So I think it's, I'd like to see Teixeira. I don't think he is just a buffer. I think we are going to have to bring him in at some point. And yeah, I could see about a 75 minute come in. We're gonna want him in to come in the 60th minute, which means he'll come in the 75th minute.
Well done. All right. So before we close out, I did want to talk a little bit about some news that did come out this last week related to the NWSL. They had a independent investigation that was completed. If you haven't got a chance to go out and read that, it's like a 130 page PDF. So maybe you're not enough of a person that wants to go through that torture of reading 130 pages. So there are some synopses, there's some articles, there's some podcasts where you can find out about it. But the main thing is some horrible, horrible things happened over a long period of time related to both physical abuse, sexual abuse, as well as something that's similar to what we've dealt with here with the Red Wolves, which was verbal and bullying type stuff that was just pervasive and continuing. And the suggestions that were given ultimately by the report was you have to have an independent entity that reviews all these type of things and not put it in the hands of either the league or the team. And my question to you is, should USL and more specifically the Red Wolves heed the advice of that report and allow for an independent investigation of the Ableda situation, if for no other reason to show that they can learn from the horrendous things that that report in the NWSL showed?
I think they have waited so long, it's not really going to benefit them now to do that, even though I think it probably is the right thing in the long run. To have someone do that, to get someone on retainer in the off chance that something like this could happen again. You have a full-time academy, you have Dalton Red Wolves, Park City Red Wolves. Chattanooga Lady Red Wolves. I've been close enough to the bench. Luke Winter does an amazing job with the girls that he's coaching. That's not so like what you see in NWSL is anything I suspect happening with the Lady Red Wolves, but to have someone there that could look into this sort of thing. And like I said, if they were to do that now for the Oblata situation, they wouldn't get any credit for it. But
I don't think
mean,
they should be doing it for credit.
Well, no, not doing it for credit, but that's exactly right. Like they're not going to get any credit for it, but they still probably should because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think this way it gives transparency. You've got an entity that doesn't have a dog in the fight. And yeah. I would like to see actually an organization that's across the board that's what they do. And they cover all of the leagues.
Well, believe it or not, that's what Safe Sport is to a point supposed to do. And this report, to me, yells Safe Sport's not doing their part, right?
Kind of like how we have an organization that's supposed to help assist and train referees and instead just kind of closes its doors and protects them.
Yeah, same sort of thing. I mean, it's and this report actually even talks about the licensing that exists for coaches and the fact that that is very much geared towards financial profit versus truly teaching coaches how to coach. And it's an indictment on all of U.S. soccer. And I think USL and the Red Wolves specifically should take their announcement should have been, if they want to do it right, they should set out an announcement that says, we were wrong in taking this in-house. We should have done what has been described here. We're going to do that now. The report, we're going to give them as much time as they need. And until that separate company makes a determination, we will take no action on Oblata. If they were to do that tomorrow, they will get burned on social media. They will get just thrown in the trash because that's what social media likes to do, the Red Wolves. Doesn't make it wrong to do it. They take that action. They take the lumps that'll come with admitting that they should have done that from the front end. They put themselves in a better position. And if they truly believe in Bobleda, that he has that as has been implied that he hasn't created this bullying culture that has been implied that he has, which is what the USLPA seems to think the Red Wolves believe, right? If that's true, then an independent arbitrator or an independent place would come to that same conclusion. If it's not true, they their hands are done. They're washed of it. The decision's not theirs. And that's, I think, not only in this scenario, but in all scenarios that involve these type of situations where there are accusations of abuse, and it's verbal abuse in this specific situation, right? But it's still abuse. And the fact that these abuse accusations in that report talked about it from youth soccer on, right? And one of the things we talked about was like, wasn't he a youth coach? How did he coach like this if he was a youth coach? Well, now I'm wondering, well, maybe it is normal in those youth coach scenarios. I don't know. So have someone do the investigation. It's not Red Wolves. It's not USL. Admit that you should have done that from the beginning. Take your lumps on that. And then whatever they decide, they decide. That's what I would like to see. I don't think it'll happen.
Which I want to come back to the point I was trying to make was I want to see it under the auspices of something that has teeth. And I was wanting to suggest it falls under the United States Soccer Federation. That they would even have the ability to even pull.
But that's just that U.S. Soccer does have that through Safe Sport. Like Safe Sport is connected to U.S. Soccer because of the Olympic connection.
But and actually, it's part of it. In other words, that the decisions they make, I mean, they could pull their ability to compete if it comes to that. I mean, in other words, give them real authority.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, something has to be better than what it is. And I think USL put a statement out. It was okay. Any statement any company typically puts out is not great. There actually were a couple of Louisville City companies that put out some statements that were basically, we want to support women's soccer. We want to continue to support the specific women that play for Louisville. But unless we see significant change, we will be pulling our funding. That's a great statement, right? And there was a brewery and I think GE were the two companies that said that. I think we need to see more of that as well. Not just now I'm walking a little bit away from the Oblata thing. This is more of a overall thing. You hit him in the pocketbook. And as much as these supporters groups, and I'm smiling because it cracks me up, think them not playing drums for a half have any impact, they have no impact. First off, half the fans there don't care that you're not drumming. And the ownership doesn't care because you already bought your ticket. If you really want to have impact, the impact comes through the sponsorship. The impact comes through those type of things. It doesn't come through supporters not drumming. It doesn't come through not coming to games and supporting the men and women on the field, because that's not the point, right? And so ultimately it comes down to, how do you affect their pocketbooks? And the way you affect their pocketbooks is you don't renew season tickets. You don't do those things until you see real change. And if USL doesn't get their stuff in order, with the Super League coming, with W League growing, with League One growing, Championship growing, they need to have this on point so they can be the ones that say, hey, we got it right. And if you read that report and you read the summaries of that report, they give you a path to do it. Follow that path. Because even if that doesn't work, you can at least say, hey, we took the advice that was given from an independent former assistant attorney general to the U.S., to the United States, right? Like, we took the advice that was given from a pretty darn smart legal mind. And if it doesn't work, then we did everything we could. But if you don't follow that advice, you can't say that. So anyways, it's a lot longer than I expected to talk on it, but I did think it needed to be discussed because I do think it has some impact to our specific team.
Well, it's been really grueling as a Red Wolf supporter through all this. And I would like other supporters to not have to go through it. So if these changes come into play, so they are dealt with ahead of time, I'm all for that, because this, you know, it's been excruciating, and I don't want another supporter side to have to go through it.
It comes down to it. We all want to focus on the action on the field and what the players are doing.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what we want. There are people on social media who just enjoy torching people, and I'm not even sure how much attention they actually pay to the sport anyway. We want to pay attention to the action, and that's what we want to talk about. Can I do a nice, happy, uplifting as we end? We'll do a Biggles Wade report. You don't even have to play the music, but...
Oh. Okay, bye.
Do you feel bad? Do you want to... You can go ahead and play the music.
No, I don't want to play it now. Now I feel not important, so no. You get nothing.
Ruin the moment. Just ruin the moment, guys.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, our friends Biggles Wade Town on the road at Balearica Town came from behind, tied the game 3-3. This is the FA Cup third round qualifier. That led to a replay on Tuesday at the Yvette Brewer Stadium in Biggles Wade. And they came away with the victory. I believe it was a 2-0 victory in the replay. So they are now moving on to the fourth qualifying round.
For folks
who are watching the Welcome to Wrexham in that National League, which is right below the top four English professional leagues, this is where they enter. Biggles Wade is not drawn against Wrexham in this particular round. They're playing a team called Farnborough, who is right now two levels above them in the pyramid. They're one below that National League where Wrexham is, but they're two levels above Biggles Wade. They'll be playing them, and if they win, they move on to what's called the first round proper, which is where the full professional League Two teams enter. So congrats to them. This is a fantastic run, something that I think is really uplifting for that team, considering they went through a relegation last year. Our good friend Chris Nunn, as their manager, stepped down towards the end of the year. So they've had a lot of kind of tough times last fall. So we're happy for their last winter. So we're happy for them that they're able to go on this run this fall.
Yep.
So, by the way, Alf Church is still in it. So
there you go.
All right, guys. Well, on that note, I think it's time for us to go ahead and say Avida Vete or something like that.
Bye.
That's it. you were trying to do the Italian. Do you think we would do Spanish?
Right? I don't even think I know how to say it correctly in Italian. So there's
that. You definitely don't, because that.